Addy, no. Good girls don't eat cat food. Come here. Come here. That's a good girl.
Hey, you didn't get married this week, did you?
No.
Fuck. I should have saved that for the
show.
Yeah,
you should. Welcome to None Taken, the internet's only debate and current events show with me, your host, Dustin Hare, in sunny San Diego, and over there in San Francisco is Alan. The window reflection looks sunny to you. I can't quite see outside. I see a mirror over your door that looks to have a tree painted on it, or it's directly across from a tree. I see a TV screen behind you that's now, oh, it's still on. But I don't know the weather. Alan, America wants to know the weather there.
It is gorgeous here. It was a beautiful day. Not too windy. I think it was like 70s probably. I went to, we can talk about that later. But I went someplace else that was a little bit warmer. But it was a beautiful day here in the Bay Area.
Nice.
Hi, everybody, by the way. I see a Pittsburgh Steelers pillow in your background. I don't know where the fuck that came from.
I don't know. It came... No, stop. I don't want to talk about it.
Communist bullshit.
Yeah, okay, sure. The communist Pittsburgh Steelers. That's where the steel curtain came from.
See?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're on track.
Nailed it. You got really lucky there. There's no way there would have been any other connection. It's like the antithesis of...
It's just go like to Pittsburgh. Remember,
go to it's just like the pre-show meeting. Oh, by the way,
pre-show meeting.
I meant to tell you when I went down to get a beer right before we started. That pre-show meeting went a little long. So good news, the edibles just kicked in.
Oh, this will be a fun show.
This will be a fun one. My hands are so sweaty.
Hunter S. Thompson time, right here.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well. It's a white knuckle, all out high speed burn all the way from here to Barstow and Purdue. Just another freak in the freak kingdom. You're all welcome here.
Very nice.
Alan, I think you have some topics for us.
Of course I do.
Do you want to get started? Do you want to talk about our personal life? You talk about something funny? Where'd you go today?
I
said like you were a dog. Where'd you go today? Did you go outside?
I did go outside. Did you go potty? I went to.
Did you go potty?
Brewery.
Go back out and go potty.
I went to a brewery in San Ramon called Fieldwork, which is one of my favorite breweries.
People go to San Ramon, like, not to just live there. Like, I couldn't imagine being like, you know what's cool about the Bay Area? Being 30 miles inland for no reason.
Do you remember the Bishop Ranch area from when you were there?
No, but I know that whole area is really nice. Like, I'm not shitting about on the area in general. I'm just saying, like, when you have the Bay Area, I don't know why you'd end up in San Ramon.
Well, so I wouldn't be there except for the fact that most places around me aren't open.
Oh, right.
Not that they have different restrictions, but I guess they just have a better clientele that's actually willing to come out on Tuesday. So a lot of the places around me are like open Thursday through Sunday or something like that. They just don't have the business to be open daily. So, because actually this brewery, there's the same brewery, Fieldwork, in Berkeley, which is way closer to me, but they weren't open, so... Anyways, it was gorgeous over there. Had some good beers. Had a nice burger. It was like a summertime seasonal burger. It had like fresh mozzarella and balsamic
mozzarella.
It was hella good. Had a few beers.
You're the one still saying hella up there?
Oh, yeah. We don't stop. It's NorCal, baby.
Oh, God.
That's what I did today. I actually went to a couple breweries this week. I went to...
You got that slaw burger again.
Yeah. Oh, dude, that place, that's Armistice here in Richmond. That place, they have this special beer they only release a few times a year. It's called Ipina, and it's like a pina colada double IPA.
I don't really like fruity for no reason beers, but I like pina coladas.
Yeah, I don't typically like fruity beers either, but this one is really good. I only drink usually like one or two of them, and then I switch to a regular IPA, but it's rare, so there's that. It tastes really good, and it was a beautiful day on Sunday as well, and I got another one of those burgers, which was dope. Mm. So that's now two burgers and beers in the space of 3 days.
Nice. Nothing wrong with that.
No, I see no problems with this. And then Wednesday, so the day after we recorded, I went and saw my buddy over in Sacramento. And actually, that was the day that they announced that they were closing everything in Sacramento the very next day. So I don't know if it was because of that or what, but there was a
because
ton
of you?
No. Because of that announcement, but there was a ton of people out in the streets. Mm. They still had dine-in restaurants, but we didn't do that because I wasn't really comfortable with that. So we just
did you have dine-in? Well, did you have dine-in in San Ramon?
No.
Oh, no, oh, okay. Outdoor. Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, because San Diego shut down all their dine-in yesterday.
Yeah, I think a lot of places did.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was different
last week.
I didn't think it was a state. Well, no, it was state-wise, I thought. Okay, certain counties. Okay.
Yeah, but like 70% of the people in California, I think, were impacted.
Right.
Anyway, so I went to this place called Porch in Sacramento. I got chicken and waffles, which is always fun to have. But it was really good. Not the best I've ever had, but pretty close. So that was awesome. Oh, and it's like a Louisiana style restaurant. Ooh. So my girlfriend got a po' boy.
Yeah.
And I've never had one.
Oh, really? And have you not been to New Orleans?
No, I never have. Oh. So I had a bite. That was freaking fantastic.
Yeah. Was it good bread?
Yeah, it was. And the shrimp were like, they were good.
It's always amazing when people like try to replicate something that's famous either from a certain restaurant or a city in general. And then like, yeah. I'm talking about sandwiches and they just like, they fuck up the bread. It's like, oh, I got the best meat, all the sauces, everything's just right. And they're like, well, let's just go to Vaughn's and get a bag of white bread. Like, okay.
Yeah, people from Philly always talk about that with the cheesesteaks because apparently you have to get this Omarosa bread
or
something.
Right. Yes. And the Chicago, like a hot beef, like a Chicago hot beef, I think is what it's called. It has to be like a Puritan roll, a Puritan bakery roll, like. Otherwise, just like, why?
It's not
the same. Yeah, it's like you can make a sandwich like this. If you want to make a sandwich like this, don't go to all the other trouble.
Like, right. Especially if you're going to pass it off as a cheesesteak or a po' boy or whatever. No, the roll was great. So I don't know if it's the same as New Orleans. I've never been there. But
this is really.
How about you?
I've been to New Orleans. I went there because my brother got married. So a bunch of guys went there and drank in the city.
That is not I stayed up until
10 a.m. that day.
Did you really?
Yeah, I was inside and I watched the street cleaners go through Bourbon Street and I was like feeling nauseous thinking of like watching like the aerosolized vomit and piss and soap just fill the air outside. And I'm like, nah, I'll just stay in here like for a long time.
Yeah, that sounds bad.
Yeah.
So, I was asking about your week.
Wait. I think that I was hanging out with a prostitute.
You
not
think.
Well, because we didn't have sex, but my wallet was missing later. So.
These things happen, you know?
Yeah. Anyway.
So your week.
My week. It was pretty good. I mean, I worked last week, but the weekend was fun. I had like 2-3-day weekends in a row because the weekend before I'd gone to Vegas. This weekend, woke up early on Friday and the girlfriend can't eat... turkey. No, she can't eat pig. Pork.
Yeah,
that's the word. So I tried to see if I could make turkey bacon taste good on the grill. And
did you?
It still feels like turkey bacon. And it doesn't have like the fat on it that you need, but it tasted like maple and brown sugar.
So it tasted better than regular turkey bacon.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Line up the best turkey bacon you can make in a pan and then have this. And then in another pile, like a million miles away, have real bacon that I smoked on the grill with brown sugar and maple. And I'll run to that pile a million miles away because this still was, it's fine. Like if you can't have pork, this is good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Makes
sense. Yeah. Then we grilled a bunch of carne asada that night. And not a lot on Friday. Oh, my girlfriend wouldn't let me play hot dog dick with her dog.
you must explain what hot dog dick is if you're
I was gonna tell you what kind of dog she had first. But
okay.
Well, but she has a dog that's part coyote. Like he looks like a coyote. Like and the way he walks and like his legs look like a coyote. So hot dog dick. Hot dog dick is where you unzip your pants and instead of pulling your penis out, you put a hot dog in there and then you zip it back up so that the hot dog's sticking out. And then you go, come here, come here, come here, come here. And the dog comes over and eats it out of your fly. And the dog gets a hot dog and everybody laughs.
Don't you worry that maybe you're training the dog with some future behavior that you don't want?
How so?
You know, like if you're just walking around, you know.
Like in what way? Oh, my penis doesn't look like a hot dog.
Oh,
no. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He'd be like, is there a Vienna sausage? I mean, I am a little hungry. I just ate. I could probably have that. Yeah.
It probably doesn't smell like a hot dog either, I hope. Dogs are very driven.
You know what's
smell.
A fun game? I was thinking about doing a new segment called What's That Smell? Because I couldn't figure out what that smell was when we started recording, and I realized it was my fingers, and I had just given my dog a treat, and it smelled like organ meat. It was like this freeze-dried whatever.
When you said fingers, that story could have really gone a different direction, but I'm glad it was just a treat.
Yeah, it was organ meat.
Nice.
Saturday we went to a friend's house. That was kind of nice. They lived on like a hill. So we had sun until like the sun went down, like until it was like below the horizon. It was great.
Right.
And so we went to their house. They had a pool. We stayed outside the whole time. Didn't get close to anybody.
Nice.
Yeah. Like even in the pool, like we had big floaties. So it was like floaty barrier around you plus the next person's barrier. So it was like, this is great. And then I was a total asshole. I was standing like, so the wind was clearly going west to east. And I was just standing on the furthest west direction I could. Anytime I talked to anybody, I'm like, well, if I have it, you guys are all dying, but like, I'm good.
Nice.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
So that was the fourth, right?
That was the fourth. We didn't do any fireworks or anything up there. I actually didn't see any, even from up there. When we were driving home, we could see them from other parts of the city. Did you guys have any fireworks up there? I know LA had, like, you saw that panning shot from the helicopter in LA where it looked fake, right?
Dude, it was exactly the same here.
Really?
Like, yeah, honestly, I worked on Saturday. So I got home like around 8, I grabbed some dinner, and I was just going to chill, watch some Netflix. And because I was under the impression that all fireworks shows had been canceled, there was nothing to see, right? So
Parks Pros, Moose Out Front should have told you.
Moose Out Front should have told you. So I was kind of I was operating under that assumption. And all of a sudden I start hearing all these explosions, and I'm like, well, it's just people, you know, around, you know, shooting off, you know, small fireworks and stuff. And it just kept going. So finally around, I don't know what time, maybe 10 o'clock at night, I walk out on the deck, and it looked like there was 8 different city fireworks shows going off. Like,
wow.
Like Pinole, Richmond, Oakland, San Pablo. Like, it's just like everywhere. And I'm talking like big, huge fireworks.
Yeah, like the high school put it on or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It looked very similar to the shot you're talking about in LA. And it
so you could see that from your yard or from?
Yeah, from my deck.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, and it went on for hours, man. I don't think they stopped till like 2-3 in the morning.
Did it bug you?
It kind of annoyed me a little bit.
I mean, it's like once a year, you know?
Yeah, I'm usually fine. Like, I like fireworks. Usually go up to my dad's for the 4th, and we shoot off fireworks up there. But I was like, oh, come on, man. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. How does Addie deal with fireworks?
She doesn't care. No. She's usually afraid of the world, but she doesn't care. Nothing with
that's
them.
Funny.
Yeah.
It's the one thing she's not afraid of. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. She's like, well, that's outside. I don't care. I'm in the house. Like, yeah.
My son's dog is terrified. Like, he's freaks out. He's kind of like that anyways. So there was some sports over the weekend. Did you get a chance to watch any of that?
I watched some of that golf tournament in back east somewhere. I don't know where.
Orlando. Was it Detroit?
Actually, I think it was Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Detroit.
Yeah.
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 It was interesting to see that they didn't have crowds still, but it was like in a country club kind of setting. So
yeah,
there
it felt
were people
normal.
Just like, yeah, but there were people just like sitting in their backyards. And they were cheering sometimes, but
yeah,
that was fun to watch.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. To think about those people with their property being there and there not being enough of a crowd for you to not see them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bryson DeChambeau won.
Yeah, apparently that's a name we need to know now if you follow golf, huh?
Dude, he's been on a tear.
The only thing I
dislike about him is his choice of hats, but he wears this weird like captain hat thing. Like,
oh, great.
You know what I'm talking about?
You know what? Somehow I didn't notice it now. God, great. Do you remember when, who was the guy that used to, was it Fowler? Used to wear all the bright colors?
Yeah.
Was
Ricky
it
Fowler?
Ricky Fowler, yeah. Anything's better than that. That was cool at the time, but I don't know.
He wore like the bright burnt orange or something, right? Didn't he go to OU?
He went to Oklahoma State. How dare you?
Oklahoma State.
And that
is
why, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Close. Yeah, they wear ugly orange there. I shouldn't talk shit. That's the Broncos color, but it's a different.
It's a little different.
Yeah, that's my team. The golf dude, that so that guy's on a tear. I think I sent you a graphic of all the records he's holding right now, or like there was something that nobody's done in like 25 years, I swear.
Yeah, he is absolutely killing it. You did send me that graphic. I'm pulling it right now. So he's first in like 6 categories. So off the tee, he's ranked first, scored a par first, round in the 60s first, top 10s first, earnings first, and wins first, all since the PGA Tour restarted. So was that like 3 tournaments so far? But he's just been on a tear since they...
I've never heard about him before. Was he making his way up before then, or did he just take advantage of this opportunity in this moment? Like, are a lot of pros not on the tour right now?
I think most of the pros are there. He's been around. I mean, I know the name. He's never been like top of the field, you know, in this many categories. But I believe he won some tournaments last year as well. So he's not like brand new.
Yeah.
But he's definitely on a tear that's unprecedented right now.
Would you say he's scored in the 60s more than Austin Powers?
That's, yes, he probably has. That's a high bar, but
yeah. I'm nice a high one. Bar right now. I'm not a bar. All right.
We have baseball coming back July 23rd.
That's soon. Oh, did you see the rules?
I did not. I saw the opening day, and I was kind of excited because the Dodgers and Giants are playing the opening day.
Oh, that's cool. The 23rd? What day does that fall on? Does it please be a Sunday?
I think it's like a weekday, to be honest.
Whatever. They got to maximize their time.
It is. It's a Thursday.
Okay. So what's a 1 o'clock game? Like, aren't probably all the Thursday games super early? What? Oh, shit. Baseball.
The new rules.
So
there's something about how it, the length of time or how to end
extra
it,
innings.
Right?
Extra innings starts with the guy in second.
Right. I did
Do you get
see
to
that.
Pick the guy, or is it like a ghost runner?
No, I think.
I think it should be like backyard rules. Like, you've got a ghost runner on second. If you get a single, he scores. If you get a single, he's only on third. No, if you get a single, he stays on second. Yeah, ghost runners. Right. You remember ghost runners when it was just
I
you and like
remember,
two other players?
You didn't have enough kids? People. Yeah.
All
right. Or you let the other team's manager choose, but then it would never end. They put like the slowest guy.
Yeah.
Isn't there a sport where they do that? Like, they get to pick who takes the penalty shot? Or
the
something?
Only thing I know is there's a ancient, like, Middle Eastern proverb about a king who's deciding which son gets the kingdom, and they have to race to decide, but whoever comes in last, whoever's camel crosses last wins. So they switch camels and race at full speed.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
But that's probably not what you were referencing.
Dropping some camel race knowledge.
I've got a lot of camel race knowledge in there. I only do one per episode, though, so don't ask me for another one. Frantically for more camel facts.
You've hit your camel story limit. I got you.
It's kind of a hard hump to overcome.
Very nice. Very nicely done. I think that pretty much covers sports.
Thank God.
I mean, so we got coronavirus stuff.
Coronavirus?
We continue to hit new records, it seems like, on a daily basis. Did you see the thing today? I think it was today. The WHO is saying that it's possible that the coronavirus is being transmitted through airborne transmission.
No, you brought that up in the pre-show, and it confused me because I thought we already knew it was airborne transmission.
Yeah, but so... Like, I think if you remember, we actually talked about this on the show. I asked you if it was safe to be in like a retail store with the air, you know, the air conditioner recirculating. Would it potentially recirculate the virus? And you mentioned that primarily the issue is proximity to somebody when the droplets come out, because the droplets are affected by gravity. Basically, they just fall to the floor or whatever surface.
Yeah, they hit other surfaces. Yeah.
Right.
Or if they're carried in the air, they'll either be carried to you or to another surface. And then
so this
you can
is
lick
where
that
there's...
surface if you'd like.
Sure. Lick all the surfaces you want.
Yeah.
So this is saying that the droplets actually can kind of remain hanging or floating in the air for some period of time without just immediately falling to
but
a surface.
That's only in a confined space without airflow, though, right?
Correct.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense, right? Because like if there's no airflow in that room, there's sort of
or
like
poor ventilation, at least.
Poor ventilation, sure. There's right. like the, all the air is essentially suspended and you're just under the effects of gravity to make it fall to the ground. And,
well,
you know.
So the thing that concerns me about that is they're talking about reopening schools.
Yeah.
I mean, Trump is very adamant that that they want schools to be reopened in the fall.
Did you listen to that episode of the New York Times where the guy was talking about how the virus is mutated to become more infectious but less and deadly less. And somehow less less infectious with kids? So the idea was kids aren't getting sick, but they can still be like transmitters of it, spreaders, yeah. And that I actually didn't understand the reason why he said that kids aren't actually getting sick from it. Can you explain it, or do you recall? Because I feel like that would have something to do with it.
So I remember the reason that they think the virus is becoming less lethal and more and spreading more effectively is just because that's kind of the natural thing that viruses normally do. Obviously,
right. One of its more recent mutations, they say it mutates like every 2 to 3 weeks, and most of those right. mutations don't matter or aren't significant. But the more recent mutation, I guess the spikes on the end became like more pointy. So,
right.
so by nature, that made it stick to things better, but then not kill people as much. And I don't know why.
Right. And so the nature of the virus, of any virus,
is to live within its host without killing it.
Right, because if it kills it, then if it kills the host, it dies too.
Well, and it can't be spread again.
And it can't evolve, right? So the nature of viruses tends to create viruses that spread more easily but are less lethal. And they think that's what's happening with the coronavirus. I know in the past they've said that a lot of the issues that are caused by the virus are actually caused because your own immune system's response to it, where your own immune system ends up, you know, destroying your organs. And they were saying that in children, their immune system wasn't as well developed, so perhaps it wasn't going after them as badly. But I don't think that was his reasoning that he said.
Actually, I think you're right. I feel like that is right. That like with kids, they're just like if they get infected with it, the body just beats it, and they never actually are transmittable. And it's not. So okay, this goes back to what you were saying about particles being in the air that I actually wanted to say too. So I'll tie both of these together. It'll address your first point, and it'll wrap this up. So if you're in that confined space, and most of the particles are going to fall out and fall to the ground, air moving or not. But right. what sounds like they're saying in that study is that some of them will stay suspended, can be found suspended in the air if you don't have good airflow. And that means you could walk into those. However, right. that wouldn't be a high viral load, which means you would have to be unlucky to run into them and then continue to be unlucky and keep running into them until you develop a high enough viral load to get sick. I think. Not a doctor. I'm doing a podcast, but I do work in airflow. So some of this is important.
No, I think that's a valid argument. Did you see also that they're saying that really we have to refer to the virus as more of a vascular disease than a
yes.
respiratory disease?
Yeah, and I keep forgetting what that, like, so vascular meaning it's in the blood.
It attacks blood vessels, yes.
Okay.
So the reason it's so bad, well, first of all, it enters your body through your airway, so obviously the first place it's going to attack is your lungs.
So it's still a respiratory infection, but it's a vascular disease.
Right, so where it attacks primarily is where you have the very fine small veins like you have in your lungs.
It's S-M-O-L, small.
Small boy, yes. So like you have in your lungs, but also there's other areas where you have that. So it can attack the kidneys. It can attack the brain.
Oh, the air, you said the small little hairs? Is that what you said?
Small veins.
Oh, my penis.
Nice dick joke. It can attack even the gut because wherever you have things filtering into the blood or out of the blood, so your kidneys, your gut,
yeah,
you know,
you get those smaller capillaries at the very end.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's where it attacks. So actually they're seeing symptoms of people that are infected that have strokes because it's attacking the brain.
Right. It just goes to what your comorbidity is that has you at risk. It's like
exactly.
if you're deficient in this region and that has to do with blood flow, guess what? If you have this virus, you're going to suffer in that area worse than most people. So that goes back to it infecting or, excuse me, being more deadly for minorities, that minority group tends to have a higher population of people with those types of infections or comorbidity.
Easy for you to say.
Okay, I did it.
Yeah, like things like diabetes and other diseases like that. In other coronavirus news, we had the president of Brazil testing positive today.
Bolsonaro,
after being somewhat of a denialist about the virus for quite some time, so that's sort of ironic. Herman Cain tested positive last week.
Herman Cain.
By the way, I was reading about that, and I forgot. Do you remember that he was the CEO of Godfather Pizza before?
I didn't forget that. Do you know there's still one Godfather's Pizza in San Diego? I saw it the other day.
Is there really?
I have never seen a Godfather's
Pizza.
No, it was a Hungry Howie's. Hold on.
I've never seen the Hungry Howie's either.
Yeah, I think I saw both of them for the first time around the same time in my life, and I'm just like, well, you're not Pizza Hut, you're not Domino's, you're these weird ones.
Yeah, so I had completely forgotten about that when I was reading that story. And this is after he attended the Tulsa rally where there's pictures of him on social media not wearing a mask.
Yeah,
you said there was something about a meme or something with that?
Yeah, I don't know if this came out. Actually, I do know. This wasn't for the Tulsa rally. This was for A Night in America Under the Stars, where the president will regale you.
In South Dakota,
yeah. So I guess he had tweeted right before that nobody's going to have to wear a mask and, you know, everybody's welcome. You know, you don't have to wear a mask because we're not afraid or something like that. And then there was another tweet in that meme that was his team tweeting on his behalf saying, we regret to announce that he's been diagnosed with coronavirus and will be self-quarantining.
I love how people say, well, we're not afraid of the virus. Like, the virus gives a shit. It doesn't care if you're afraid of it. It's not a thing.
It's like brave people standing up at the ocean and being like, I'm not afraid of these waves. It's like, it doesn't matter what you think about these waves.
No, it really doesn't matter. Yeah. You had a note about the Spain antibody study, which I actually didn't.
Yeah, thanks. I would have been so mad if we didn't talk about it. So there was a study that came out yesterday out of Spain. It had like 600,000 participants, like a lot. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I kept trying to find something in this study where I could be like, oh, because I really try to like read things skeptically and try to find some reason, you know, no matter what, like you want to, you know, even if you think it's true, you got to hold it, measure it, see what it looks like. Okay, that makes sense by the time you're done. And like this all kind of checked out. So it was like 600,000 participants. And what they found was only 5% showed long-term antibodies. So like very quickly after recovered patients, they kept track of recovered patients and they tested for antibodies and they would see them at like, you know, pretty high levels in like 20% of people for like a few months, I think. But I think after like 3 months or something, after a certain number of time, it's down to 5%, which means you're not going to recover from corona and then 4 months later be able to recover from corona.
You won't be immune.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually had heard something about that. I hadn't heard of the study specifically, but there are concerns. And there's been concerns since the beginning.
There's been concerns from the beginning that we wouldn't be immune.
We talked about it on the show.
Yeah, like what people would say is we don't know. You know, there might be reason to think, there's also no reason to know. And now, you know, this might get proven wrong, hopefully. But you know, it's not a study that seems to have anything to it that's easily dismissible, which is too disappointing in this case.
I saw some people talking about the possibility that we may have to, if there is a vaccine that's ultimately created, as we hope, that it might be not a one and done type vaccine where you might have to go get this thing every 3 months or 6 months.
That makes sense because they say that it mutates every 2 to 3 weeks. So that means it'll become a different, like, you know, the virus. I don't think we talked about this on the show. So I was talking to my aunt who works at, I live in San Diego and she works at a University of California in San Diego.
One of the many.
and in a relevant field. And she was saying that, you know, the research shows that or tracking shows that the big spread that started in Wuhan, the next big spike we saw was in Italy in a region that seemed to be connected with a garment trade. So it was like, okay, you were in China and then you came back to your garment trade in Italy because it was like northern Italy, right? But it was the first big cases from Italy came from a ski resort in the Dolomites, which is like very, very specific. And it's most likely those were people from that region that would be textile workers that came from China. However, that's an attractive place for the whole world to be skiing at. And then those people would have then gone through Paris and then to New York. And that's where you saw the next big infections, especially as we know in New York.
Right.
And if you look at like the virology of it, it's a slightly different virus in Italy than it is in China. And then the one in New York is most closely related to the Italy one. So, you know, all of our tracking that we can make the best sense of is a map that shows starting in Wuhan, becoming more dangerous in Italy, and then that being spread then to New York, which is just so weird because we're Americans, and being a little bit different there, and then now, you know, all over the world. But had we talked about that? Does that sound like a story you've heard before? Because that like totally changed the way I looked at this virus and how it spread.
We haven't talked about this. I have heard about that. In fact, they call the strain that came from Italy is sometimes called the European strain. Or the Italian strain. But yeah, everything you said there is accurate from what I've read and seen reported as well.
Speaking of accuracies and coronavirus, did you have something else to say with that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah!
Again.
Yeah.
Again. So the president's talking about it again today. Is it, I don't know, Twitter, or did he say it in a conference?
I saw it on Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah, he tweeted, I don't have the tweet in front of me, but it's something along the lines of, like the great Henry Ford Clinic or hospital, a medical group, has found that hydroxychloroquine is effective. And then I think he even said the words on certain patients, and it's like, yeah, okay, fine, on certain patients. And then he says, like, unlike CNN lied to you about, I don't know, a bunch of, you know, he got into Trump speak at that point. It doesn't really matter how I say it word for word. But the point was, it is true that it is maybe effective on some people. That's not the point. Like, you're out there saying that everyone should go put some in their cupboard and like take it without medical supervision.
I actually have the tweet. The highly respected Henry Ford Health System just reported, based on a large sampling, that hydroxychloroquine, in all caps, by the way, all caps, cut the death rate in certain sick patients very significantly. The Dems disparaged it for political reasons. Parentheses, me. Disgraceful. Act now. You know, coincidentally, you know who else is a big fan of hydroxychloroquine?
What?
Bolsonaro.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, the irony.
So this is something that I've actually heard for a while, and I've never actually motivated myself to go and research. So the Trump family has a small financial stake in hydroxychloroquine, but he doesn't control the stakes. And I thought that was true. I knew I'd heard that a few months ago. So viral claims link the president's vocal support of testing of the drug against COVID-19 with possible financial incentives. The reality is less simple. So
what I had heard from that story is that it was true, but it's such a small percentage of his, I guess, financial empire that it's almost not a factor, is what people were saying.
Okay, but we're talking about somebody who's very petty by nature, and we've seen that as evidence in the way that they act. So if somebody has a stake in something and they are like that, does it really matter what the investment is? I'm not talking about this like we need to go fucking make sure he pays taxes on it. I'm saying he has a reason to say this is helpful.
Right. Yeah, I could see that.
And he's actually, at least motivated that something he bet on will win.
I saw they're reporting about the new book that's coming out next week by his niece. And part of what she talks about is she talks about personal incidents, interactions with him that she had personally, where he lied to somebody else about her in front of her and kind of gave her a little wink and a nod, like, you know I'm lying, I know I'm lying, but I'm doing this because it's fun for me. And he kind of gets off on that stuff. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
That's kind of what the implication was in the book.
Yeah.
Which we can talk more about later.
Yeah. Well, I think we were going to get some more Trump stuff. What were you going to set up for that?
Oh,
Trump,
yeah.
Trump stuff.
You said Trump under the stars, so he had the rally in South
Lawrence
Dakota.
Welk.
God, wait, hold up. Did you have to watch Lawrence Welk as a child?
No. The only thing I know about Lawrence Welk is there's a shitty par 3 golf course and Lawrence Welk Resort, just north of San Diego, and I played golf with my grandpa there.
Aw, how sweet. My dad actually watched the Lawrence Welk show when I was a kid, so I was submitted to that horrible, horrible
show. So they
show.
Had like bubbles on the screen, right? There was like champagne bubbles on the screen.
I don't remember that. I remember a lot of polkas and big band stuff.
And like dancing numbers
and
stuff.
Yeah. Weird, like light blue suits. Anyways, what are we talking about?
Sorry. I don't know. This isn't going to be in the show. It doesn't matter.
Why? It was good.
Okay, fine. I don't think anybody knows who Lawrence Welk is. And then we talked about it for 5 minutes. I started this.
People know. I saw a meme. I sent it to my dad about it. Anyways, right. There was a meme about Lawrence
I'll keep
Welk.
Focusing the Facebook ads on the 34 to 55 demo, and we'll be
perfect.
Fine with this. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. No, so there was...
Now I have to keep this in.
Oh, okay. Then I won. No, I'm kidding. So there was a rally in South Dakota at the... you know, the president statues.
At Mount Rushmore. Did you forget Mount Rushmore?
You know what I was thinking is the final boss in the...
Oh, yeah.
Did
From
you
Mike's
tell me
joke?
That? That's, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Anyways, so my question is, Trump seems to think it's still 2016. He seems to be campaigning like it still is. Clearly, it's not. I think you had some thoughts about that as well.
Yeah. Well, I actually, it all leads into that, but like, you know what? It fits what we were talking about with his investment style. Or with the investment from before. I had this thought this morning. I want to look at the style of risk taking that he uses when he approaches investing. That's what I mean. Because it seems like he's running this campaign in 2020 using what he know won him last time, but it's in the face of everybody on his team telling him not to and desperately saying, please just do this game plan that we have. You know, it's almost like he's a gambler that's like, he's like, no, that last bet worked. Why would I change? And just trying to let it ride. And then like a follow-up to that was, is this all because the president can only speak in the way that he's comfortable speaking? So if he can only talk in the manner that he knows how to talk, he can't, you know, essentially he can't Joe Biden and just sit in a room and do what the people tell him if they said the computers say you'll win if you do this, because he has to speak the way Donald Trump speaks. He doesn't know how to speak any other way.
I think definitely the latter part, for sure.
But is that why? Is that why he's saying, like, no, I won't do what you said. I have to do 2016 strategy because, you know what I mean?
Well, he always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, right?
Yeah, right. So they've said that is they keep telling him what to do, and they're like, no, it's my campaign.
Right. And he, you know, he, against all odds, did win the presidency last year when polls said he wouldn't. And so I think he still has that in the back of his head. He thinks it doesn't matter what the polls are saying now. He thinks that he can just put it on repeat and do what he did last year and win again. The problem is, it's not 2016. He's not running against Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Right. He's running against another old white guy. Right. He even has trouble sort of going after Joe Biden the way he went after Clinton.
Yeah, he said he's having trouble with the nickname. He wants to move it from Sleepy Joe to, I don't know, Corrupt Joe. Didn't he do something in Ukraine? I think Joe Biden called the president of Ukraine and asked for a favor. Joe Biden said, hey, President of Ukraine, I heard you like me. I'm going to need a favor.
Right, that seems like something that Biden did, yeah.
And then he pushed him up against a wall and stuck his hands down her pants. That was a different
story. He said,
grab
her by the...
No, he said, I heard you like me. That's what Joe Biden said, yeah.
Oh, that story. Dude, we definitely should edit
you're cutting
this out.
Yeah,
I'm cutting
we
out?
Will, but... Yeah, but it's not on you. My internet connection is unstable.
Oh, like...
This was a particularly bad case of somebody being cut in half.
Is it good? Are you good?
I'm good.
Okay, it's fine now then.
You just, yeah, you kind of, for a second, but.
But everything's fine now?
Everything's fine now.
All right.
So the other thing I was going to say, it's different this year than it was the last election cycle. He's not the outsider anymore. You know, he's
Trump?
Not. Yeah, yeah, he's not coming in from the outside and saying, I'm going to drain the swamp. He's in the swamp now. He's been in it for 4 years.
From that position alone, he should have a different strategy.
But even when he was asked, I believe on Fox News last week, you know, kind of what's your platform? What are you running on? He didn't really have an answer because he's an adversarial candidate. He needs a punching bag, right? He doesn't do well just going up there and saying, these are my ideas and this is what I'm going to do to bring the country forward. He likes to go up there and say, you know, that guy is a traitor or that guy, lock her up, that guy, you know, whatever he wants to say. He needs an adversary as opposed to coming up with his own he can't stand on his own ideas or his political convictions because he doesn't have any, but that's an opinion, not a fact.
Yeah, but if that opinion were true, it would map pretty well onto the actions and behaviors that we've seen from this person, right? Like, we don't have to have an opinion about the president to say,
we can make the argument,
yeah,
based on what he's done. Yes,
and then absolutely. You could put that on someone to disprove that argument, and I think it would be difficult, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's what we talk about when we make quick opinion statements and we don't expect the world to get mad at us, is that, okay, make the counterfactual and I'll listen.
Right.
I looked at myself on the camera when I said that as if I was like, right? Okay.
None taken, Dustin.
Yeah,
none
no,
taken.
I'm not offended. Every not time taken. I point at this guy, he's like right in my face.
Those edibles are kicking in, man. Oh, yeah. Okay. Did you have more? Okay.
Yeah, I thought he did have, well, so yeah, I did have a little bit more to say from the Trump under the stars or whatever we're calling it. I thought Trump gave a powerful speech that weekend. It was stupid. And there was times where he like said the wrong word. And then he even said the wrong word at one point, and he went back to explain what that word meant. And I almost got the feeling that he didn't say the wrong word. I think that was a part of the speech. And I think he was like, hey, what's that word mean? And they're like, oh, Mr. President, you know what that word means. It means this. Because in the speech, he says that word. And then he goes, and you know what that word means to the audience. Because he's like, you know, if I didn't know that, there's no way they knew that. Which speaks to Brito's point from a couple weeks ago, how he was saying, like, if Trump were a comedian, he wouldn't tell any of the jokes that only a few people get. Like, he wouldn't make a joke unless the dumbest guy in the crowd got it. And that's the way he delivered that speech. Despite that, I still thought that he gave, like, a powerful-ish speech for him. And it was vivid, and it was full of declarative statements about holding on to the status quo that nobody's trying to keep anymore. And I listened to a podcast that kind of dealt with race in America. And one of the things that they talked about as a theme on that podcast was that there's like a general consensus that everyone in the country kind of buys into, and it's generational kind of. So it's like for a generation or two, maybe there's this general consensus that everyone agrees on about like our morality or our norms. And right now we're shifting those. Like, we're going through a shift of what our, like, our consensus is. And those, the new consensus doesn't center around any of the things that Trump's trying to preserve. So that's why his campaign's saying, try something different. You can't go with 2016 strategy or you're gonna lose.
Yeah, so I've actually seen a lot of people talking about that, where he definitely seems out of step with the rest of the country and even what a lot of his base is looking for. He seems very interested in the culture wars, which some of his base obviously are still interested in that.
Well, in 2016, it feels like he won because people felt like their voice wasn't heard and they were going to make sure we all heard it.
Right.
But like, they all get heard now. So it's like, that doesn't make, you know, what were you going to say? You're about to say something. Sorry.
No, exactly. The point that you just made is that those, the things that he's running on are not issues that really move the needle in 2020. You know, and he's out of step with the country about the coronavirus, right?
Yeah.
Most in polling, most Americans don't feel like he's doing a good job with that, including, you know, people that theoretically would be in his base. And that's important to them. And he just kind of wants to be like, oh, that's over. We're done with that. Let's move on. And clearly we're not. I mean, you look at the news every day. The case is going up. It's certainly not in our rearview window by any means. And there's other areas, too, that he, you know, he seems to want to hammer home. It's just not resonating anymore. It's just not, like, as you said, it's not 2016 anymore. He's still stuck there.
We're recording a little later than usual because I had an overtime service call at I don't know if I should say where. It was for a utilities company that has an important role to do with drinking water in San Diego. And one of the guys that works there, the last few times I've been there, he always had a Trump hat on, and today he didn't. And as I was leaving, I was like, hey man, I know I've seen you before with your Trump hat. Do you mind if I ask you a question? He's like, oh no, not at all. And I quickly told him, you know, I'm a bit of an independent. So just so you know, I don't care for Trump, but like, I don't assume that I'm like, yay, Mr. Biden.
right.
You know, it sucks that that's important, but you kind of have to do that before you talk to anybody these days.
Right.
So I was like, you know, I don't see your hat. Like, I'm sure you didn't just like throw it away, but you know, how do you think he's doing? And he took a deep breath and he goes, you know, I wish he'd just stick to what his point is and he'd stop talking so much. And this is coming from a guy younger than me that works for a utilities company that just seems like his target demo. Mm. And like, he looks like his target demo. You see this guy, you're like, I guess I'd guess Trump. I mean, I wouldn't like that. I would never just assume that when I'd see someone. But like, if I'd said, hey, Trump supporter, just so you know, you'd be like, oh, sure, I guess. Like, it feels like the people that would be there for him are like, I don't know, I want to. So then I asked him, I was like, so if Biden wins, like, is the world over? He's like, I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, more of the shit we were doing before. I was like, you know, to be honest, I'm tired of how much we always have to argue over Trump. So I'd be happy if Biden won just so we wouldn't be doing this anymore, though. And he's just like, yeah, I get that. Yeah. And he's like, I get that, too. So,
well, yeah, I mean,
this is a guy that walks around advertising him on his forehead.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have anyone that I like that much. I like teams that much. But there isn't a person on this planet that I wear a hat of.
Yeah. I saw a funny tweet today saying, remember back when during the Obama administration when we all walked around with hats that said that were pro Obama and we went to rallies during non-election years? No, we didn't do that because we weren't in a cult, which is kind of what this is now. But I mean, even things as simple as the mask issue, which
he fucking politicized that. Yeah.
It's politicized because of him. And I think even a lot of people in his base are like, wait, why are you doing this? You know, sane people that that can read a news story,
dude,
or listen
to
a scientist.
I can totally put that into a feeling. When I go to that job site and I come out of my van and I put my mask on, in my head, I'm thinking this guy's laughing at me. Mm. Why would I think that? I only think that because I know he has a hat.
Right. That's exactly connecting the dots. Absolutely. Speaking of feelings, I saw a cool shirt at the brewery today. It said, Kanye attitude, Drake feelings.
Ooh, wow. Man, that is someone I want to be miles away from. Holy shit. Those are like my two least favorite things about rap in the last decade. Wow. I love both of those artists for the opposite reasons. Wow. I want Kanye's feelings and Drake's attitude. Yes. Yeah.
I just thought
it took me forever to get on board with Drake because I was like, man, that guy can rap his ass off, but I don't want to fucking listen to that guy whine.
Yeah.
And like, and you know, Kanye, it's kind of obvious. Like, I wish his attitude would go away because I like listening to him. Wow. Oh, I do not want that shirt.
It made me laugh because I immediately knew what he
it
meant.
It is funny.
Without
like, right.
Yeah. It was one of those things.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
It's a good
Hey,
shirt.
You had other politics to talk about. You told me something that's just kind of scary about Kamala Harris. Oh. You said something scary about a vice president. Fuck it. I set it up. Tell me.
Yeah. All right. So there is a story from, well, it's in a few different places. I saw it on The Intercept. But basically, apparently, in the last few presidential elections, maybe specifically the last one, before the presidential nominee picked their VP candidate, there was a lot of activity on that person's Wikipedia page. I almost said WikiLeaks page, which would be funny. Mm. But there was a lot of activity in people editing stuff on the Wikipedia page of that person. And over the last few days here or weeks, Kamala Harris's page has been edited 408 times, primarily by one specific user. And they're scrubbing a bunch of things that look sort of unflattering, sort of things that she did while she was a prosecutor, etc. So if you compare the... at least who people think are the top contenders. Harris had 408 edits. Stacey Abrams had 66. Elizabeth Warren had 22. And Amy Klobuchar had 4. So that's significantly different. Now, this could just be one guy.
Right. Well, but it almost is more suspicious that it's a lot of edits by one person.
It feels like it's an operative. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, if you had a team of people doing... You wouldn't want everybody on that team to know about it.
Right.
Keep it easy. Only have one person know.
Conspiracy
Ooh, that's scary.
Music insert here.
Atlanta didn't ever burn.
Atlanta was a false flag operation. And Abraham Lincoln was a crisis actor.
Well, yeah. And so what's the idea? It gives you a law and order person to balance him out?
Yeah, and well, the idea of actually editing the page, obviously, is that a lot of people...
No. I'm asking why that would be his candidate. I get it. Oh. I get the idea of scrubbing a wiki page.
Well, I think
page.
She's
yeah.
a very... Do we... Yeah, I think she's obviously... She's very popular.
Is she?
She is. I think she's...
Among who? Wait a second. This is the worst candidate for this party. I mean, this is the party that's pissed off at cops right now, and you're about to promote a former cop.
Okay, I see that.
How is she still alive? I thought Tulsi Gabbard buried her in the second debate.
No, I there see her. I see her on the shows. She's still out there doing the rounds. I was saying that. So the Trump ads. So there's two Trump ads. There's one where he's declaring himself the law and order president and saying that Joe Biden is not. And then there's the other ad where he's challenging Biden on his signing of the what's the act back in the 90s, the crime act.
Yeah.
And challenging him on that and saying that that's the reason that there's a lot of the issues that we have today in the criminal justice system. It's like, well, you can't have both. Be like that. If you want to be the law and order guy, then you can't criticize that because that's a law and order guy thing to do. Yeah, I don't know. I see what you're saying as far as there could the backlash because of, you know, a top cop basically being brought into the administration. And clearly that's probably why they're trying to scrub that stuff off the page. But I don't know. I think it could work.
I mean, I wouldn't vote for that ticket just because of Harris.
Really?
And,
I like Stacey Abrams better, but...
Yeah, I do too. Well, I have zero opinion about Stacey Abrams. Like, I don't have a negative
one. Just have a negative one about Harris.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't not like Abrams. She has yet to offend me.
Oh,
but,
how about that?
Yeah, but...
high bar.
Oh, God. Oh, God. No, I thought we were done with Kamala Harris. She baited him into a race argument that just was completely out of context. Do you remember when that happened in the first debate? They were like done with what they're talking about. And they're like, hey, by the way, Kamala, I feel like there was something that you had to say. Or did she? I think she. Okay, that's right. So they kind of finished talking about a subject that had to do about race. And then they were like, okay, we're done. And then I feel like she goes, excuse me, as the only woman of color on the stage, I think I have a right to talk about this. And the moderator completely just said, oh, yeah, I forgot. We have this section of our debate notes that say if you're a minority, you get to speak for like a longer time in the debate as long as the subject has something to do with minorities, which make a new rule for that. I'm totally for that. I think that's a good idea. I'm just saying that's not how these fucking debates work. And the moderator's just like, oh, well, please keep talking, Kamala. And then she goes, my friend over here, Joe Biden's a total piece of shit and used to be a racist. What do you think about that? And he's like, I'm old and I wasn't expecting this. Like, both of them. Oh, so she murdered him then. I thought he was done. And then, like, the next debate, Tulsi Gabbard just kept dragging her through the mud about being a cop. And then Kamala Harris was done. And like now, I guess Biden's just like, thank you for teaching me about my white privilege, Kamala. I would like you to be my vice president, which feels ultra condescending, by the way, too. I feel so uncomfortable talking about any of the subjects I just brought up. It's a miracle if it makes it to air, but I don't feel comfortable about that, man. I do not like her as a candidate, mostly from her law enforcement background as attorney
general,
not attorney general. Oh, what's it called?
District attorney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see your point there. Do we want to take a break with this episode?
No, there's no break. No. Okay. Yeah. We're almost done.
All right. All right. Cool.
For the listeners that don't know, our internet cut out in the middle. And if you didn't know, that's because we are smiling and having fun.
Indeed. All right. So one more political thing happened this week. The Supreme Court ruled on the Electoral College, saying that states can replace and punish, quote, faithless electors, end quote. So,
and it was presented to be a good thing. Do you think it was a good, or do you want to summarize what that means? Sorry.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I do agree that it's a good thing. We can talk about why. But so basically where this came from was the 2016 election, where a number of electors sort of started a movement wherein they were trying to deny the Trump campaign the number of electoral college votes they needed to actually claim the presidency, not necessarily by flipping to Hillary, but by, I think there was some going for Colin Powell, maybe some for John Kasich. I don't know.
Jill Stein.
Was it? I don't remember Jill Stein, but I definitely remember Colin Powell was one of them that they swung some votes to. And they did this on their own. So basically the way the electors work for the Electoral College is that each campaign going into the election has their set of electors set, right? The local, you know, the DNC in California, the DNC in Colorado, whatever, they set up who those people are going to be. And then the agreement is that after the vote happens, that those people will vote, all of their votes will go to that one candidate that won their state, right? So in California, every elector would go for, you know, Hillary last year. In Colorado, because I believe Colorado went to Trump, right? Last year?
I'm not sure. I actually don't remember.
So whatever. So those, all of them would just go to that one candidate. But there's nothing, had been nothing really written in stone saying that that had to be the case. The only example of where it really happened a lot was when Horace Greeley won the, or was in the election and then post-election died. He died after the election. And so all the people that were supposed to put in their vote for him are like, well, we clearly can't put in a vote for a dead guy. That was when it happened the most in the past. Other than that, it's only happened a few times here and there. So basically,
yeah, I remember that was like, a lot of people were saying that's like our last hope. Maybe they won't vote Trump in.
Right, right. And then it would have ended up going back to the Senate or something. So they weren't giving Clinton the election. They were just depriving Trump of the votes he needed to get it. Anyways.
Okay.
So the ruling today says that the state can, in fact, enforce who those electors vote for. So they can force them to, you know, vote for whichever candidate they say. However, there's no rule that says it has to be the person that won the state. So there is, we talked before about sort of the problems with the Electoral College and how, you know, Trump didn't win the popular vote and is still in office, and it's happened a few times. Bush Gore is the same thing. But changing the Electoral College is very difficult because it's in the Constitution. So the sort of the way around that is this thing called the Compact, which a number of states have already signed up for, which basically the states agree that whoever wins the popular vote, they will have their electors vote for in the Electoral College. So in other words,
whoever wins the popular vote for their state or whoever wins the popular vote for the country?
The country.
Wow.
And so a number of states have already signed up for this, including California. However, there's not enough yet where it would be, they don't have enough votes where that would be like, okay, we're going to decide the president this way. But this ruling, you know, they wouldn't be able to challenge that in the Supreme Court after the fact based on this ruling, or they'd have to challenge you know what I mean?
Yeah. So this wouldn't really circumvent anything yet. Just it cuts off a route to denying this from becoming the new way if another set of events can take place and make that the new law.
Yes. So
it cuts off a way of what's that called? Appealing a change.
Right. I mean, they could still appeal it, but now there's previous jurisprudence that's already, the Supreme Court's already ruled on the matter.
Right.
Easy for me.
Right.
So
yeah.
So yeah, no, I think it's a good thing. We'll see if that gets any more traction. At one point, I believe there actually were enough states that were saying they were willing to sign up to make it a thing where the person who won the popular vote would be put in office. But some of the states backed out, I believe, after.
Are you thinking of the Equal Rights Act?
No.
I feel like that's that. Okay.
Some of the states backed out, I believe, after the 2016 election, actually. Anyways, so that's that.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember having mixed feelings when I saw that, because it was like, well, because the way it was framed, the headline said, in a huge win for the popular vote, the Electoral College can be forced to reflect the state's vote. And I was like, is that a win for the popular vote? And it took me a while. I was like, yeah, okay, I guess it is, yeah.
Right, right.
And I see especially it helps with, you know, later on down the road if there's new rulings. So that's good.
Yeah, the book I told you about, How We Pick the President? You actually saw the or listened to the podcast that he was interviewed, right? He talks a lot about, Jesse Wegman, he talks a lot about the Compact in his book. That's where I first heard of it. So,
yeah, that sounds familiar. I was playing dumb so the listeners could learn. I know that. You knew I knew that. Everybody knows I knew that. You guys at home, you knew I knew that.
We all knew. We all knew.
Yeah. That's why you listen, because we're so smart. Well, you want to move on to what we've been consuming?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to talk about this.
Okay. Well, let me get mine out of the way then.
Okay.
All right, because yours was way more interesting, and I actually watched your recommendation already. So I bought some records this weekend. I got another Stones album.
Nice.
And I got into a new band out of Venezuela that they sing in English, a band out of Venezuela called Make War.
Are they Chavistas?
You know, I don't know. Please don't ruin this for me.
Okay, sorry.
It's called, I know. It's called Get It Together. I would think they would not be, considering he's the dictator of the country they live in, and I would think punk rock still says fuck no to leaders, but punk has changed. So Make War is the band, all one word, capital M, capital W. Oh, here's the thing. They sound just like NoFX. Like guitar-wise, sounds like a NoFX guitar riff, and then the lyrics are kind of a Rise Against. Like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, dude, it's like, you'll like them.
Yeah,
I promise
good.
You you'll like them.
Is it in Spanish?
I sent you a link. No, it's English.
Okay.
They might not be from Venezuela. Fat Mike from NoFX retweeted them and said Venezuela punk, so I'm assuming that means they're from Venezuela.
Okay.
Although, aging punk rock singers may not be my source of news that I care to say for sure. I think they're from Venezuela.
Noted stoner Fat Mike may have, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. If you believe the song, a theme from a NoFX record, his name is Fat Mike. He's obsessed with big lesbians. He's been a punk rocker for most of his life. He sings kind of flat. He's not really so fat.
All right. What else?
Oh, I know what else I've been consuming.
Yes. Do tell.
Coronavirus.
Is that like a breakfast cereal, or how is it?
I have a new coworker who's been riding along in my van with me, and yesterday he goes, oh, I had coronavirus 2 months ago.
What the fuck? How long has he been riding around with you in the van?
That was halfway through the day. First day.
Okay. Still, that's a thing you might want to get out there like early in the relationship.
I mean, I'm not... who else have you been seeing? I
like, hey, by the way, I have herpes. Just
right,
so you
yeah.
know.
Well, no, I had herpes. I mean,
right.
Come on. Yeah. So what
all
have
right.
you been? Yeah. What was the, so? I know what you've been consuming. You sent me a link to that, and that was fucking dope. But please,
yeah.
share it with the world.
So Saturday night, I got home from work, and I was like, I'll find something on Netflix. So I kept scrolling down. I didn't want to watch all the top 10 stuff they try to throw at you. And I found this show called Homemade. And it is a compendium of like 15 different short films. They have nothing in common other than that they were filmed during lockdown, basically, by various filmmakers around the world. And they're all like 10, 11 minutes long. I really like short films. I think that somebody that can create art like that, that in that short period of time can like make you feel something or think something. I just think it's really impressive to be able to do that in the space of 10 minutes to tell a story or create an arc. I just think that's really cool. So they were all pretty good, but there were two that really, really stood out. You watched one of those. Which we'll talk about. So episodes 4 and 10 were my two favorite of all of them. I guess I think it was 15 total. They were all good. Check them all out. But 4 and 10 are just like mind-blowing and very different than anything that you've probably seen. And they are unexpected in the turns that they take. I'll talk a little bit about the second one that you didn't see yet, just to tease that a little bit. And then we can go into the first one.
Sure.
So the episode 10 is actually directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Maggie Gyllenhaal, not Gyllenhaal. It's a hard G. Was that a hard G or a soft?
Isn't
hard...
it Gyllenhaal? I'm pretty sure.
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah.
But no matter which one you say, I would comment on it because
right.
I don't know.
Jake's sister, also noted actress. And it's set...
Human Turtle.
Human Turtle?
Doesn't she look like a turtle? Like her head looks like the turtle.
A little bit.
Especially in that movie Secretary.
So I hadn't thought about that movie Secretary at all.
And I can tell what that pause meant. You were thinking about that movie Secretary for a minute, weren't you?
So then afterwards, I was telling this about this show to somebody else, and they were like, "Well, what's Maggie Gyllenhaal been in?" So I like looked it up on Google, and of course, Secretary is like one of the first things that popped up, and I was like, huh, "I had forgotten all about that movie. It's kind of a weird movie," but there's some weird stuff in this short film. I was like, huh, maybe that influenced her a bit.
Yeah, because I always wondered, I coming out of the movie Secretary, I wasn't sure who I had more of like sexual thoughts of afterwards, her or James Spader.
That was a strange fucking movie, man.
They are so asexual people to me, I think about them. Like, they cast James Spader for the voice of Ultron, and it was like, sure, that makes sense. A human, not sexual, just a thing.
Yeah.
And then a witch fell in love with him.
Very strange movie. Anyway, so this movie is set in Maine, like in the woods in Maine, and it's based...
Episode 10?
Yeah, episode 10.
Okay. Wait, did you say what it's called? Homemade.
Is the name of the series. It's set in Maine, in the rural, like the woods in Maine, and it's sort of an alternative universe to ours, I think I can say without spoiling it. So the virus is here, but it's doing different things, really weird, kind of strange things. And there is a certain...
When they talk about the virus, does it feel familiar, like you know what they're talking about? Or do you have to go through a process where you accept they're talking about some virus?
No, you know what they're talking about. So actually, there's zero dialogue in the whole movie except for what the main character hears on like the radio broadcast, which is also pretty cool. So it's very... I don't want to describe it too much because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. There is a certain scene. You'll know it when you see it. You're going to be like, what the fuck is actually happening right now? Anyways, so yes, check that out. It's worth the 10 minutes of your time, 100%. You will fucking enjoy it, I guarantee you. We'll talk about that one next week, so hopefully you guys will have had a chance to see it by then. Yeah. But let's go ahead and just talk about episode 4. I mean,
okay, you want to set it up? Would be great. Yeah, let's set it up. So I think we can do it without ruining, but I feel like by the time we're done talking about it, we should have just ruined it. So let's just see how this goes.
Yeah.
So... It starts off with like a Zoom call with two people. It looks like me and you on here. And on the screen on the right, as a viewer, the screen on the right is an old man inside assisted living facility. And on the screen on the left is a woman sitting on a couch. They're both old and elderly. They're speaking Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I assume they were in Spain.
I thought Chile maybe, but.
Oh, okay.
Or because she's in Argentina.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. They're in South America.
Yeah, they're in South America.
So he just starts professing his love for her.
Right.
And it, we will do a worse job talking about this than they did masterfully telling this story in only 10 minutes.
True.
I couldn't believe you told me these shows were all 10 minutes long, and like halfway through this one, I was like, it's going to be over any second now.
Yeah.
And then I like press the little play button. I'm like, 5 minutes. So essentially this guy's professing his love to her, and he's doing it in such a demonstrative way that is so compelling and believable. You're like, wow, this is true love. It's true love.
Really passionate and
passionate.
And
yeah.
It's even like you watch her facial expressions while he's doing it, and you can't even really tell. Like, it seems like she's, like, he's getting through to her somewhat, you know? It seems like she's like, because her face doesn't really change all that much, but does
she hasn't talked to her in decades.
Right. Decades and decades. Obviously, they apparently were former lovers at some point. He's since moved on, and it's possible.
He's saying how he's never stopped thinking about her.
Right.
How, you know, she's the love of his life, essentially.
Yes, exactly. And there is some hints at the beginning that he might be sick, like that he might have COVID. And then that's sort of the impetus for him making this call is like, hey, I'm old and I might be dying, so let me get this off my chest.
I think they even said, like, I need to move from here or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to get this off my chest, though. It felt like the impetus. Yeah.
Right. And then... about halfway through, it takes sort of a weird turn where he goes into sort of a sexual
Oh, yeah.
And that, I was watching it because I had the same reaction as you. It's like, man, this guy is really like pouring it all out there. It's kind of feeling bad for the guy, and sort of proud of him for, you know, having the, you know, the cojones to do this. And then all of a sudden he starts talking about how he misses the smell of her shoes and her underwear on the floor. Like, just really weird stuff about saliva.
And specific, like really, oddly specific. Yeah.
And then the whole time there's a nurse in the background of the shot.
Yeah.
And you're like, geez, she's got to feel awkward right now.
She's just sitting there like playing words with friends. Right. Just like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then it takes a whole other turn towards the end, which we won't, we'll try not to spoil.
Which was just so well done, though. And the way they edited the film together was so well done, too, with it.
It was such a roller coaster.
So let me tell you about my roller coaster watching it. I was like, I had the first half of the edibles that I had before this. Uh-huh. And the way he started talking to her reminded me of the way that I felt when I imagined in the past years ago, while I've been in other relationships, there was someone that like I always remembered, and I was like, that's fine, like we're not together anymore, that's fine, but like, you know, that person, that one that you remembered more than others. And as my marriage ended up wrapping up, as we were wrapping up the marriage,
as we've documented on the show,
those feelings, like, they, you know, I felt like, oh, I don't have to hold on to these anymore. I don't have to hold these back anymore. Remember how I felt about this person, you know? So after a little bit, I started talking to that person, and it was so rewarding because it was like, this is the person that for decades as this old man, as he was expressing himself to her, I was like, I can relate to how this guy felt. And very quickly, to anyone listening, if this makes the air, that person was the person that is now my ex-girlfriend. And I, watching this show, started to feel sad. Like, immediately started to feel really sad. And it made me feel about how that relationship ended and how at one point I felt this way, the way I'm seeing on the screen towards her. And, you know, before I was seeing her, so not because of her, but just in general, I've had a lot of therapy. And one of the things that I've really gotten to focus a lot on is emotional regulation. And, you know, so I just pulled out all the tools that help in the right situation, in the appropriate situation that was. And, you know, as soon as I could, like, use what we call wise mind, I was like, well, from a wise mind perspective, like, what about this makes sense? You know, like, first of all, was that true? Like, no, that wasn't true. That was, you know, that was a memory, a flashback of a feeling.
Right.
And then, you know, then you idealize that feeling and you kind of put it on a pedestal. I don't mean the pee on the pedestal. I was in Montreal and this guy kept talking about poutine, and my friend goes, man, he's really putting the poutine on a pedestal. So I'm not putting the poutine on a pedestal. I'm putting the person on a pedestal. Like, I really put her on a pedestal.
Right.
And so when I saw that, I immediately started thinking, well, for one, it gave me a little bit of insight to his motives. So it was like, oh, the feelings that the director was trying to have you feel were landing with me very specifically. And then I was able to very quickly go, you know, I did the thing that we all do where I went, oh, how can I make this story that I'm watching specifically about me and my very specific, unique life?
Right.
That you don't personalize yourself into a story. And, you know, I did that immediately to bring myself out of it. I was like, okay, well.
But that is a skilled director that can make you do that.
Yeah, I agree. But don't you think that that's human nature? Like, don't you watch stories and put yourself into them?
Yeah, but I think.
Like, don't you do that with music lyrics?
Sure. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. People do that.
So I was, you know, fucking therapy. I was like, well, pull yourself out of that. Like, this is like a construct you're making in your mind. And immediately I was like, okay, well, first of all, those feelings you had before weren't necessarily a lie, but they weren't what you thought they were. So
right.
You can watch this story and recognize. And then second of all, you can watch this story on your screen that a director made and scripted and had people act out
right.
And maybe not think it's about you and your ex-girlfriend.
But you can recognize the archetypes as well and kind of where the... Yeah.
Right. And then you can, well, guess what? So then, and that's why I'm saying any of this into a fucking podcast that otherwise would just be embarrassing and humiliating for me and my current girlfriend. I'm saying all of this to say that I was able to look at it and be like, no, there is stories you can take from this. Like there are feelings, there's themes, there's a way to like project, it's obviously what cinema is about, but I think it's easy for the viewer to kind of project themselves onto it and lose the meaning.
Right.
And I caught myself at the beginning doing that, and I'm so glad I didn't. And I ended up crying at the end of that
movie. Really?
Like, I was crying. I'm a baby. I cry during everything. I was crying, but I was crying over her. Like, it was so great. Like, she was the best.
She was
like,
awesome.
She was so good. Oh, I hope that, I thought that was real.
Dude, it felt real. It really did.
I mean, how is that? It just occurred to me that I keep forgetting that that wasn't real.
No. It felt very real. And she's phenomenal. I mean, the way she closes it is just, it's something to behold. I mean, that, if there's Oscars for short films, she should get one.
I know. I was thinking that. I was like, dude, this needs to get like the Academy Awards and Tonys. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. So,
what do you think about what I just said? I ranted for a long time. You're one of my best friends, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
We've become very close, even closer, arguably intimate through doing this podcast weekly together.
Arguably.
What do you make of this? We have slept in the same hotel.
In a small bed.
In a small
Remember?
Bed, clothed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. No, I can see that. And I think that a lot of people do just sort of, it's almost like anthropomorphizing, but it's different, you know, where you kind of insert yourself into the film, like you ascribe emotions to animals. I think it's a natural thing to do. So I hadn't actually thought about it in that way that you thought about it, because...
Yeah, make commentary about my former relationships, please. That's clearly your place.
No,
I'd like that.
Not going to do that. But I actually, if I had thought about it, I could have gone there too in my head. I definitely could have. Mm-hmm. I didn't. But I think everybody has like a story like that in their past that they...
No, Alan, that was my point. He wrote the movie for me.
Right. I think it was therapy working, clearly. There's evidence of therapy working because you were able to pull yourself out of that. So good job, therapy. Thumbs up to therapy. Other than that,
would you like to say anything to keep my girlfriend from leaving the room right now? Apparently, because this was a huge mistake to talk about and put on to recording for all time.
Dude, you just got married like last week. Don't even worry about it. You're still in the honeymoon period.
Yeah, it's a lot of work to get divorced. Let me tell you, she'll get over this. Okay,
it'll be fine. Right. So I do highly recommend this, though. I would definitely go check those shows out. You can watch the whole thing or just those two episodes. Episodes 4 and 10. Netflix, the show is called Homemade.
You know how like when you're on more so on psychedelics, but like high doses of edibles, you kind of feel like when you're on a subject, it's just that subject and it's always supposed to be that and the thing never ends. Like when you're in a room, it's only that room. You go to another room and you're like, whoa, there's other rooms.
It's like a looping train that doesn't end.
Yeah. I'm struggling with the fact that I need to hit stop and say, no offense.
None taken.
All right. God bless.
Cheers.
Now this is podcasting.